Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show, live on SiriusXM Channel 111 every weekday at noon East. Hey everyone, I'm Megyn Kelly. Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show. Today we are joined by two men fighting for free speech and against the cultural drift we're seeing across the pond in the UK, not to mention here in America. You've seen them both right here on our show before, talking about the outrageous way they were treated by the woke British media. And now they are here together. Lawrence Fox is the leader of the Reclaim Party. He's a recovering actor as well. You may know him from his many roles. And Father Calvin Robinson is presenter of Common Sense Crusade. Together, they host the newly launched show, Fox and Father, which is streaming on YouTube. Guys, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having us. It's great to be here.
Hey, Megyn. Nice to see you again.
Okay, so this is, you've returned triumphant. Not you, Father, but you, Lawrence, with a middle finger up to all of those who came for you and thought that they had silenced you forever. How does that feel?
The thing that makes me smile, my beautiful missus always says to me, smile, it really upsets people. So the thing that makes me smile is just don't give up, you know. And what when you enter into this sort of battle and this war that we, this cultural war that we fight in England and in America, you have to be willing to go all the way. You can't surrender or back off or apologize. So what's been great has been the fact that Calvin and I, both of us, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but my frustration with British television was the fact that you had to have someone on who thought one thing and then they just paid another person to disagree with them. And you never really got anywhere. You just had a shouting match. And that's what the off-communists, as Dan has actually stolen off us, I reckon, the regulated demands. Whereas Calvin and I don't really agree on everything, but we agree, we have a core set of principles that we agree on and we argue the detail. And I think that actually,
we have a proper conversation with some nuance.
Yeah.
You know, mainstream television these days is now, they believe that, other people believe that, but it's on the extremities. So if I want to talk about a life issue, a pro-life issue, I don't want to necessarily have someone on who's anti-life. You know, I want to get into the nuance of what it means to protect life, what sanctity of life is. We can't have those conversations on the mainstream media. So now we can. Yeah, I think pretty much that's, it was just
that,
a case of,
just to put a point on that, I saw that the Ofcom, the one who oversees the discussions on British media, they decided not in your favor, Lawrence, on your scuffle on GB, which we've talked about before, where this woman was crapping all over male suicides, like, that's not really my concern. We don't need a minister of health and kind of screw the men. That was my takeaway of what she said. And you were disgusted and said to Dan Wooten, our pal, who would want to shag that? This woman, you know, she looks bitter, blah, blah, blah. And their findings, ultimately, after their big investigation, I remember one of them was that the presenter really didn't take the other side. Like, they wanted Dan to be a gay man. No, I would. I would shag that in a minute. Like, this is so absurd, the place that we've gotten to, especially in British media.
It really is. I mean, Dan, bless him. He actually, the thing is, it was such an enormous piece of confected outrage from our side. So the minute someone was in the little green room and had decided that it was the world's worst thing that had been said, they organized their leftist pals to come after me. And I still, to this day, I mean, I don't know what you think. Dear old Calvin, by the way, which is the thing that no one ever talks about. It's debatable whether you should fire me for saying I don't want to shag someone. I would have thought modern day feminists would love the fact that men wouldn't want to shag them. But sorry, Calvin. Am I upsetting you already?
I'm not up there.
But Calvin, who is showing some moral leadership and loyalty and all of these things, it gets fired for standing behind up for his friends.
But none of it was to do with
whoever
what
fires
said,
a priest, Calvin. What happened? I mean, but like the priests don't get fired, they don't get canceled.
No, well, they do these days. The problem was, Megyn, that they couldn't control us, so they tried to silence us. And that's why we've gone independent, because they can neither control nor silence us now. We've got our own platform.
Yeah,
and control.
So they, what's that like? I mean, you know, there aren't that many people doing this in the UK. There's a couple, but not many.
It's really good because it's, as I sort of said at the beginning, you know, we can talk about things that are really difficult things to talk about, like abortion and IVF, and we don't agree about these things and stuff, you know, but they're really, really difficult issues. And you couldn't talk about that on the mainstream media because you'd have to have some sort of screaming abortion fanatic on one side and some sort of the conception is the beginning of life on the other side. And they just shout at each other. So we actually try and get into the nuts and bolts of it, the ethical nuts and bolts of it. And then Calvin tells me why I'm a terrible Christian.
This is true. I mean, not every conversation needs balance, right? Not every conversation needs someone on the opposite end of the spectrum. And we can get to the nitty gritty. And actually, I think the reason people like Fox and Father is because it's just like two mates chatting in the pub. We're having the conversations that everyone else is having that they're not hearing on the mainstream media because you're not allowed to.
And we're just recording.
Well, especially because the left already controls. The left controls the BBC. They control most of the media in the UK. So it's very hard to even get the right represented. And they put little, you know, straw men up in order to represent the conservative response to all of their arguments and all of their editorial. So why can't there just be conservative commentary? This is our response. This is how we see the world. It's wonderful that you found a way to do it. All right. No, wait, I want to ask, you mentioned abortion. Let's kick it off there. So Father, the big father, the Pope, has issued an edict this week speaking about the gender problem and saying it's a no on gender ideology and on the surgical transitioning for kids and others. And to me, this seems like just sort of the written down version of what he's been saying all along. But it does, for once and for all, answer the question of, is the Pope Catholic? The answer is yes, this Pope is, as it turns out, Catholic. What do you make of it?
Well, that's always been a rhetorical question, hasn't it? Is the Pope Catholic? But in more recent years, it's been a genuine question. People have been quite concerned. So it's good to see him coming out with some sound doctrine and saying, let's talk about the dignity of human life. And that means talking about abortion, talking about end of life, but also about the trans issue, about the idea that we are made in the image of God, imago Dei, and we cannot mutilate that image because that's mutilating the image of God himself that we were made in, the beauty that he designed us in. And so went on a few months ago, we saw the Pope busing a load of transsexuals into the Vatican to affirm them. And so it's good to see that actually that was just a mission outreach, probably, because what he said today or this week is that there is no such thing as trans. There's no such thing as changing gender or sex. And it's certainly not something that should be done to children because it's harmful and it goes against our very purpose.
And it's, yeah, and 100%. It's also what we've had a report released in the UK today called the Cass Report by a woman called Hilary Cass, which is really damning about the transgender issue and about transitioning children. We ourselves, one of the other things I do is run a legal thing, and we're taking the government to judicial review over socially transitioning children in school. But I think the best point that was made about transgenderism, which I think is just Satanism dressed up in nice words, yeah, and rainbow flags, is that is what Graham Linehan said, which is you can't, if you tell a child that they're born in the wrong body, they'll believe you because they're a child.
I mean, the Catholic teaching is clear that we are a body and we are a soul. So you can no longer be in the wrong body as you can be in the wrong soul. It's a logical fallacy. It doesn't make any sense. So for people to affirm that is affirming lunacy, really and truly.
Okay. Sorry, I had somebody in my ear. But I want to talk about the Cass Report because this is big. And in some areas, the UK sees reason and light before we do. In some areas, they don't. But I would say they're ahead of us on recognizing the truth about transing kids and giving kids medicines, puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and so on. This is big, where now the New York Times headline is England limits youth gender medications, part of big shift in Europe, reporting that the National Health Service in England started restricting gender treatments for children this month, making it the fifth European country to limit the medications because of a lack of evidence of their benefits and concern about long-term harms. Citing England's Dr. Hilary Cass, an independent pediatrician, saying for most young people, a medical pathway will not be the best way to manage their gender-related distress. The NHS will no longer offer drugs that block puberty, except for those involved in clinical research, and recommending that hormones like testosterone and estrogen be prescribed to minors only with extreme caution. This follows the path that Finland, Sweden, Norway, and Denmark have all taken. You know who's not taken that or even sniffed around it? America. The American Academy of Pediatrics is still reaffirming its endorsement of such care, and I use that term in quotes, stating that hormonal treatments are essential. They're essential for these confused kids, which just, I mean, to me, is evil. This is evil what they're doing.
Yeah, and this CAS report is interesting because she's not saying actually puberty blockers are good or puberty blockers are bad. She's saying there's not enough research on either side. And if there's not enough evidence on either side of that debate, we shouldn't be giving these things to children. I think that's a good starting point. But where we need to end up with is that actually these are the very, very same drugs that Americans are giving to pedophiles in chemical castration. Therefore, why are we ever giving them to children and saying it's a medicine? It's just abhorrent, isn't it?
It is. And what they're doing... But what's so great about this is it's now sparking the next level of discussion, which is what else is happening in schools? What these third-party providers that they're called, you know, they're in British schools, instead of having a national curriculum where we teach, you know, kids about gender dysphoria or other imagined, made-up madnesses, you bring in third-party providers like Stonewall, who did great work in bringing about equality for homosexuals back in the day, but they now that they've solved that problem, they've had to come onto the transing of the kids. And Alison Bailey, who's a very important barrister in the UK, has been brilliant in saying we now need to turn around and look at everything that our children are being taught, because for the state to put its hand in to a family and to turn around and say I'm gonna let your child pretend to be something it's not behind the parent's back is about the most egregious assault, secular assault on the sanctity of what a family is. And a family is the most important thing that any of us are going to grow up in, broken or mended. You know, that is the most important thing, I'd say.
Absolutely.
Well, I love to see the progress, and I only hope and pray, although we're working toward it as well, that we follow, because there's only so long the United States can ignore our closest friend's behavior, the UK. And all these other countries, you know, the Scandinavian countries and others who are doing real testing on whether these treatments help. The answer's been no, and actually might hurt. I mean, they were talking about cancer, about some of these puberty blockers actually raising the risk of cancer, these so-called harmless puberty blockers that are it's just a pause. They're not telling parents you're increasing your child's risk of dying of cancer. I mean, that's not a pause. That's a permanent life sentence.
It's some of the parents that we're dealing with in this judicial review, that if you listen to some of their testimony, which I have, it's absolutely heartbreaking, because most parents really, really, really want their kids to grow up as tolerant and genuinely inclusive people. And they want their kids to understand that, you know, racism is bad and homophobia is bad and all this stuff. And they just missed out the T bit. And they thought that their kids were being taught about, you know, genuinely including people in a genuine way, not in this woke way, which means excluding people. And what they've found is that they're now, one of the parents we're dealing with, his son is due to be castrated in May. And it's just listening to her speaking about her own son and how guilty she feels about it. So I would go one step further than there is no evidence that, you know, any of this stuff was, I don't think it's up for discussion. I'm in the Michael Knowles category of looking at the position we're in, which is that it's a real evil and it needs to be undone in the same way that Mengele's work needed to be undone.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be too hard about it, but you don't cut and injure children.
And you can see it's an ideology, because almost every single child that went through the Tavistock Clinic, which was the main gender clinic in the UK until it got closed down recently, almost every single one of them ended up making a life-changing decision, whether that was drugs or surgery. None of them went away thinking, actually, this is just a mental disorder, or I need some therapy, or I need some therapeutic help. It was all life-changing decisions, which shows you that this is being pushed on these children, and they're not actually being helped in a way that's good for their health or well-being. It's deteriorating their health.
Well, and not only that, but now you have parents who think socially transitioning their kids is fine. You know, just letting them cross-dress, go by a different name, without understanding that the vast majority of those kids will move on to puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones. And then you're done. Then you've got, and that's the other thing that they just found, that puberty blockers alone can raise one's risk of fertility, of infertility. They did a test on young boys and testicular function from the kids who were given just puberty blockers, not estrogen, and saw a real decrease in potential fertility. So none of this gets disclosed. In a way, you guys were lucky that you had Tavistock. I know that sounds weird, but it just, it was so egregious. People had to start paying attention.
But even worse than that, Megan, even worse than parents affirming their children in this gender decision. Right now in the UK, we have the government said to schools, you've got to stop this. You've got to stop transing children. But schools are saying, we're going to do it anyway. And parents are finding out at parents' evening that teachers are calling their young girl a he. They're not finding out that it's, they're finding out at parents' evening when it's been happening for months that the schools are making unilateral decisions about the, their children's health. The parents aren't being informed, consulted, advised. And it's wicked.
Well, they should be. Any sensible, we've had a nominally conservative in name only government for the last 14 years in this country. That we were talking earlier, and I'm of the view that if that's happening, that what should happen immediately is that school should be closed, and the head teacher of that school should be taken publicly in view of the parents into a police van and taken to a police station and investigated and charged with child abuse, because that's what it is.
They're going against parents, going against the state, going against medical advice, going against the reports. They believe in it.
Ideological insanity.
I agree. And it's part of social transition. So you're allowing that the school is making a decision for the parents about allowing social transition to begin, which, as I just pointed out, in overwhelming numbers of cases will lead to blockers and cross-sex hormones. And you know what? You've just sterilized your child. Good luck. Thanks, guidance counselor, who has maybe a four-year degree and almost no psychiatric training. It's completely irresponsible. All right. Now, one thing I wanted to say as we zoom back is it's a very good thing you two deeply offensive men did not make your remarks in Scotland, right? Because as you know, you could go to jail now for insulting someone over there, which is kind of, you know, all three of our bread and butter these days. So what do you make of the insane new Scottish law against alleged hate speech?
The truth is offensive and people don't want to be offended. We've gotten to a point now where it's happening so fast that 1984 is becoming a reality. Thought police, word police, language police. In Scotland, if I was to read from the gospel in my own home and someone was in my house and found it offensive, they could report me to the police for offending them by speaking my truth, by living my faith. I don't know how we've gotten to this point that we're asking people to dob in people that are saying something that could potentially hurt feelings. It doesn't matter if it's true, doesn't matter what the ideology is, it's if you're hurting someone's feelings. But that's a decision. You take the choice to be offended. Even if I may not be choosing to offend you, you may be choosing to take offense from what I'm saying, but you can still get arrested for it.
And the funniest part of the whole thing is that in the first week of hate crime reporting, there were over, I think, 8,000 reports of hate crimes, and 4,000 of them were aimed at the racist, in my view. Does that cover me?
That's interesting. There were also 8,000 complaints when you said what you said on GB News.
We must be speaking same audience. The guy who's in charge, Hamza Yusuf, who I think is he's famous for doing this video where he goes, Scotland is like 98% white people. And he's famous for doing this video going, there's no one who, everyone is white. He's white. The prime minister's white. And it's just sort of racist rant. So in the first week of hate crime reporting, he was the most reported hate crimer.
Oh, I love that.
The guy that brought it in. It's beyond insane.
Scotland's like William Wallace, Braveheart, it's known for its toughness. The UK in general, stiff upper lip. Whatever happened to stiff upper lip?
Whatever happened to courage? Like, this is what I want to know. We talked about the gender stuff, and it's like, where were the dads? Where were the fathers sitting there and walking into school and saying, what are you teaching my daughter or my son? What are you doing? And, and in the same case, we've got this in this hate crime legislation. Okay. It's like, where are the people just turning around and saying, absolutely not, William Wallace would be turning in his grave?
Well, they trick you because they paint it as a good thing. They say it's there to protect minority groups, right? But there's no protection for women in this new law. If you're misogynistic, it doesn't matter. What they say is a protection for the trans community. And what that means is that you must go along with the new orthodoxy. You must subscribe to the approved narrative. And if you don't, we'll clamp down on you. It's a law to punish those who aren't woke.
Yeah,
in the minute we have left, are you getting a lot of, as you now walk around the streets, free men Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for saying all the things.
Are we? Yeah, yes. I get a lot of people are very, very nice to me in the street and stop me. And that does make it better. But I don't feel safe in this in the city I live in. I think this city is completely has been captured by a very, very nasty man, Sadiq Khan. So hopefully he will be gone as mayor, but I doubt he will be. But yeah, I get a lot of love. Yeah. You do too.
It's absolutely lovely. It really is. People say, thank you for saying what I'm thinking, because people want to hear their own thoughts and opinions on the public square too. And they don't hear them very often because the rest of the media is controlled in this country. So this is why we do what we do, right?
Yes, my brother.
I'm Megyn Kelly, host of The Megyn Kelly Show on SiriusXM. It's your home for open, honest, and provocative conversations with the most interesting and important political, legal, and cultural figures today. You can catch The Megyn Kelly Show on Triumph, a SiriusXM channel featuring lots of hosts you may know and probably love. Great people like Dr. Laura, Glenn Beck, Nancy Grace, Dave Ramsey, and yours truly, Megyn Kelly. You can stream The Megyn Kelly Show on SiriusXM at home or anywhere you are. No car required. I do it all the time. I love the SiriusXM app. It has ad-free music, coverage of every major sport, comedy, talk, podcast, and more. Subscribe now. Get your first 3 months for free.
Go to SiriusXM.com/MKShow to subscribe and get 3 months free. That's SiriusXM.com/MKShow and get 3 months free. Offer details apply.
All right, guys. So what is the level of interest over there in this crazy presidential election we're going to have here in 7 months? Do people care about Trump v. Biden?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed. I think most people in Britain look to America to see, you know, the old adage of America sneezes, Britain gets a cold. So, you know, it does. I know that boring old adage of it's the most important election ever, but it really does seem to be very, very important because Biden is standing for everything wrong in the world and Trump is not a politician. And that is what's so lovely, just to have a non-politician, a human being trying to run a country, whether you like him or not.
Yeah, I think it's quite serious. I think this is make or break. I see that old Christendom crumbling around us. The West in general is failing, falling. Europe is almost gone. America, I really think, will be the last stand for Christendom. It will be the place where the last fight is held for what we now know as call civilization. And a lot of that depends on who's elected in this next election. If it is Donald Trump, there's a fighting chance. If it's Joe Biden, all hell could break loose.
Mm-hmm. I know you're seeing the erosion of, you know, public displays of faith in the UK, same as we've been seeing over here for years. So I heard you guys talking about how there were no public real acknowledgements or celebrations of Lent, and yet any other holiday gets celebrated openly and with vigor.
Well, they're doing it. We've in the last 2 days, we've had the call to prayer on just outside Parliament.
Yep.
And we've had the call to prayer inside cathedrals. And we've had the call to prayer just today inside Buckingham Palace. So it's Calvin and I disagree on all of this stuff because I'm like, you know, Muslims and Christians are going to have to learn to live together. And there are a lot of morally and ethically sound Muslims as well as there are Christians. Calvin's less.
This is a Christian country, Megyn, right? We have a Christian head of state who's the supreme governor of the Church of England. Our faith is built into every institution in the land, from the military to the legislative to the jurisdictions. Everything is Christian by default. And therefore, our king, our head of state, should be sticking to his role as defender of the faith. And if he truly believes that Jesus Christ is our Lord and Savior, if he truly believes there's one way to heaven, which is repentance of sin, baptism in water and the Holy Spirit, and faith in Jesus Christ, if he believes that and he loves his neighbor, he should be encouraging our Muslim neighbors to find Jesus Christ, not saying, happy Eid Mubarak, or, you know, come and say your Muslim prayers in the palace. It's wrong because he's leading souls to damnation. The same can be said for our prime minister. The same can be said for our houses of parliament. All of this encouraging of the Mohammedan faith is actually harmful to their souls. It's not nice. It's not kind. It's not welcoming. It's leading souls to damnation.
See, this is where I disagree with Calvin. I really disagree with him on this thing. I'm just like, there are loads of nice, moderate, ethically brilliant Muslim people in
sure,
this world.
Therefore, you want them to go to heaven. You want them to know Jesus Christ.
They do know Jesus Christ. They do. They believe in Jesus Christ, don't they?
They don't.
Anyway, I just think I'm not sure. In the same way as like when Trump today did his bit, right, and he was talking about abortion,
yeah,
that he knows that he can't say, I'm going to do a heartbeat bill or I'm going to do this, because he knows he's not going to get elected if he does that. So you have to, we have to find a way of communicating and compromising, not the truth, Cal.
It sounds like you're saying we should compromise.
No, I'm saying we need to find a way of speaking with people we don't, who don't share our faith, and understanding what the boundaries are between us.
I would say a clear boundary is not having people call to prayer in a cathedral, the Houses of Parliament, and Buckingham Palace. To me, that's a boundary that's been crossed.
I agree with you on that.
Okay.
So we agree on that.
Let me ask you on this same front. Very interesting. I read this with my first guest, Victor Davis Hanson, today. There's a burgeoning debate on the right here in the States about kind of this same issue. It's come up in the context of Israel, where some of the more isolationists are saying, sorry, this happened to you, but we're kind of out. We got our own problems to worry about, a lot of them, and we can't really help you that much. And we actually kind of don't want to get involved in this nightmare morass that's over there. So good luck to you, but we're out. And that spun into like an interfaith battle where some are saying affirmatively to Jewish people, Christ is king, which, like the Muslims, Jewish people do not believe, right? They think Jesus was just a man. Wasn't Christ. And Jews feeling like, whoa, you know, like, okay, you have your belief, we have ours. But why is that coming in to contest support for Israel in this attack that was launched on them? And I'm seeing it divide people I really like and respect and, you know, have a lot of fondness for on both sides of this intra-GOP battle. So how do you guys, you must have heard about this. What do you make of it?
Coleman Hughes was on Joe Rogan, and he was really good, and he's a really wonderful thinker. And he made that point, which is like, why are we picking at Israel for the civilian to military or to terrorist kill ratio, where we don't do that in Ukraine and we don't do that anywhere else? So for me, I think that it smacks of a double standard in the way that we look at the Jewish people. And also, I've just got this really old-fashioned view of the world, which is that there are not that many Jewish people on this planet. They've done a great deal of good, and they're under threat. Whenever something bad starts happening in society, it's the Jews that get it first. So I feel that we have a moral responsibility to look after what is a genuinely oppressed minority. Now, they are a very well-armed, genuinely oppressed minority. But, you know, Calvin made a point earlier, before we were talking, sorry, it's a sort of slight segue. We were talking about the Rihanna nun thing, you know, this constant winding up of Christians that is going on. And he said that if you look at the designer, the photographer, who else?
And the producer, I think.
And the producer, they were all Jewish people. So there is...
She was on Interview magazine she had dressed like a nun, like a sexy nun, which is, newsflash, I mean, let's not face a thing, it. Rihanna. Yeah, you can see a boob.
It's just mockery of the faith, isn't it?
It kind of is a thing. Sorry to say so.
What?
Sorry, Father. Sorry,
it's
Father.
Like a,
sexy nun.
That's like a
come on, Megan.
Naughty Halloween thing. I mean, you could do naughty anything at Halloween. But no, that's... What naughty nuns are there?
I don't know. I think there are. It is a trope.
It's a clear mockery of the faith. And for me, I get the America first thing. I really do. I think British politicians should be Britain first. But then after that, the consideration is wider. And what we're seeing is the Islamic faith is actually anti-Western, anti-Christian. You know, it's anti-women, anti-homosexual, anti-everything, but in a very harmful way, as in, you know, let's make sure that women cover their entire bodies except for their eyes, and let's not let them drive, and let's stone homosexuals to death, if not push them off roofs. Like, it's very against our way of life. But people would rather side with that because they hate the Jews so much. They would rather side with a terrorist organization such as Hamas than say anything that's remotely pro-Israel, because they don't want to be seen as a Zionist. They hate the Jewish people with a passion. And I'm seeing that on the left, but also on the right. And I think Megan's right that it's becoming so divisive. And I think it's by design. We saw this over here with Brexit. We saw it with COVID lockdowns, with the vaccines, with the Ukraine and Russia, and now with Israel and Palestine. This seems to be, over the last 5 to 10 years, a big issue every few months that is purposefully set to divide and conquer the public, the general populace. So we're all fighting amongst ourselves.
But in terms of the right, so in terms of people that are sort of centre-right leaning, what about why would they suddenly now turn on Israel? Because it's like Tucker's doing it a little bit today. I mean, he's being accused of doing it. I don't think that's what he's doing. I think he's just trying to offer an alternate perspective. But why is, because it is true, Megan's right. We have had in our life, in this most recent iteration of the catastrophe that is the ongoing clown world, this sudden separation and people are flying off to criticize Israel.
Yeah.
For what I can see is no reason. 1,300 people were massacred. It's like, you started it, mate. We have to get rid of you. That's what happens.
And to add to that, there's a fair amount, you know, using the Christ is King, you know, slogan, saying in justification of their actions, which to me, I've never seen this in my lifetime. I'm 53 years old. I've never seen like Christians kind of throwing down against Jews as you're non-believers. You're only going to get so much of our support. You know, we don't see you as an ally because of the whole, was he Christ or just a man thing? This is new to me. What do you make of it, Father? I mean, this is like your business.
Yeah, I think I've got some nuance in that because I think Christ is King. And I don't think we should ever be ashamed of saying that. And I think what I worry about now is that that's being painted as an anti-Semitic slur. And then people are being discouraged from saying it. So there's an element of anti-Christian sentiment being brought about by this movement as well. And I think that's partly from the hard left who don't want us proclaiming that Christ is King. So we should always be proclaiming that. But of course, we're never doing it to antagonize anyone or to be anti-Semitic. And that's when the problem comes in. So we've got to always keep that in mind.
Yeah,
it's morphed into like a, you know, I said this the other day, but like giants suck. You know, like it's morphed into sort of a team, you know, if you say it aggressively to a Muslim or to a Jew, it has a different meaning than if you're at Sunday mass, you know, saying it out loud. And I don't know, I feel uncomfortable with the whole thing. You can absolutely say they lost me. They went too far. There are too many civilians dead. And I did want a more proportionate response. And I don't like Netanyahu. And America's got other problems. All that is totally within the fair lane of criticism and all that. But when you cross over to like the Jews are the problem, the damn Jews, like we're hearing more and more of that. It's kind of scaring me.
Well, there are a lot of old conspiracies. I think we've had so many years of not trusting the elites because we've seen them lie to our face so many times. Again, COVID's a great example of that with the lockdown, the vaccines, the mandates and all of that, that we don't trust anybody anymore. So we're latching on to every conspiracy as if it's true.
But do you think there's also an element of the fact is there must have been during, you know, in the build-up to Second World War where the Jews were blamed for everything, but it was actually the reparations plan put in place by America. Sorry, America. And I'm not sure how much the UK paid, you know, impoverished Germany. And what Hitler did was he used the impoverishment of Germany to blame the Jews. Whereas, so he sort of ignored the elephant in the room. Whereas what's happening now is we know that this culture, Britain and America, has seen uncontrolled and unfettered immigration under Biden to the tune of tens of millions, as far as I can gather, that people are in search of their identity look for somebody to blame, but they ignore the elephant in the room, which is their culture is changing drastically. So they just think the Jews are an easy target. So let's attack the Jews. But for the thought of Jewish school children in London to not be able to wear a Star of David, which is the irony and the nihilistic irony behind that is beyond. And for Jewish people to be frightened to live in this capital city and for that to exist in 2024 to me is so much more powerful and important and real, because it's actually real, than any sort of weird blown up version of what we're calling Islamophobia, as our streets are completely controlled and dominated every single weekend by people calling for the genocide massacre of Jewish people. Yeah. I just think it's not a complicated situation. You just have to go, who's calling for who to be murdered and what do we do about it? And in London, we have no answer to this at all.
Yeah, I agree with all that. Do you disagree with any of that, Calvin?
Now we have a two-tiered policing system. You know, I've walked through London, seen these protests of them calling from the river to the sea and calling for the genocide of the Jews, saying that Hitler was right. And these people are approved of and allowed to get on with it as they hold up their terrorist sympathizing signs of pro-Hamas. But the moment you stand up for something that's slightly on the right, then if you hold a Palestine flag, sorry, an Israeli flag up, or if you go to a war memorial or something, you are the ones that are arrested. So that two-tier policing.
Lawrence got arrested for saying, I'm going to tear down those little cameras that are spying on us. He didn't even do the camera. He just said, he got arrested. So they're arresting Lawrence. He's always in trouble.
That's pre-crime, isn't it?
For that. But you could say all that stuff out of the streets. It's ridiculous.
Pre-crime.
It's so bad for society, isn't it? When you go, okay, so I sympathize with those people who want to dismantle the surveillance state. I get six coppers around my house. A guy can stand on the bridge in London and call for the eradication of the Jews, for merchant shipping to be attacked by Houthi rebels. Like, we're not even getting into the politics of the situation. That is illegal. You're not allowed to do that. Whereas what I'm talking about, they've still got my kids' phones, they've still got my kids' iPads, I still get police coming around to my house all the time trying to intimidate me. And I'm going, it's because I'm the minority. If I was marching mm-hmm. with the Palestinian mob and saying, it happened 2 or 3 years ago, so it's not really been covered in the modern news cycle. There was cars driving down Bayswater Road in London going, kill the Jews, rape the Jews. And these guys got off. Nothing happened to them.
Wow.
So once we lose faith in the judiciary, we're in real trouble.
Yeah.
The influx of Muslims who do not wish to assimilate has been a problem in much of Europe, France in particular, Germany, but also the UK. And I know that there have been articles about it. You guys have talked about it. But to see it with our own eyes in these crazy protest videos out of the UK, as we've seen here in America, it's pretty alarming. I mean, here in America, you kind of see it in a couple of like key cities, Dearborn, Michigan. We talked about that earlier, Minnesota. And yes, a little bit more in the urban centers like New York. But England is a smaller country. And to see the thousands, hundreds of thousands on the streets with these Palestinian flags right after 10/7, I mean, the response had barely begun by Israel, was quite shocking in terms of just how much England is changing. And I do wonder whether you're seeing the same thing we're seeing, which is in these pockets, there's absolutely no desire to assimilate.
Well, also, you're exactly right. The spike in anti-Semitism happened immediately after the 7th. So it happened well before there was any sort of Israeli response. And, you know, Stephen Fry, who is an English thinker who I don't agree with about much, was right when he said that anti-Semitism is a light sleeper. And I think that it's very indicative of where a society is when you're looking for somebody to attack and to demonize and to other and to vilify and destroy. And I think that's scary. What do you think?
I don't think it's just the Jews, though. I think it's the Christians, too. I know three people who've been arrested for silent prayer in their own heads. You know, yeah, exactly. It is. It's anyone that's
the woman
not
across the
new
street
culture.
From the abortion clinic. Is that who you're talking about, Calvin? We saw a video
Caroline
of that.
Farrow. Isabel von Spruce, yeah. Okay. Father Sean and Adam as well. They've all been arrested for being in the vicinity of a closed abortion center, just praying silently in their own heads, just Christians praying. No signs, no protests, no harassment, no intimidation, just praying, which tells me that someone somewhere fears the power of prayer.
Well, they hate Christians because they hate the fact that to a Christian, the highest authority is not the state.
Yeah.
And that's the major problem, isn't it? Because I don't look at any of our national institutions as authorities over me. I look at them as things that should support my family, my life, my nation. But at the moment, they're attacking it. And the only thing we've got left is the family. The wisdom passes. You know, I don't agree with my dad on everything either, but we see each other every week. We have dinner and we calmly go through things. But this statist attack on the family and to replace that with, you know, mutilating children and lying about the most simple binaries in life is a part of the pretty bad places, I'd say.
Now, you mentioned something that makes me curious. I want to talk a little bit about social life for you in the UK. I mean, my impression is, I've been there a few times, it's a country that likes its beer. They like the pub. They like, it's a gathering place, a very sort of social hub for interactions, and that it's done regularly. just for people who want to stay in touch. So just tell me a little bit about what is the custom in the UK? Is the pub an every night thing? Is it where you meet your future spouse? This is obviously for Lawrence. Talk about like how you guys socialize.
I've met my future spouse, I think. The pub mentality in Britain is really interesting because the Brits, like the Russians, you know, I think they say that 60% of Russians die over the legal drink driving limit. The pub is a place where it's our sort of secular church, isn't it? And people become regulars. I was driving actually out of London the other day through Whitechapel, which is a part of London which has been completely transformed. Like it's not even remotely even recognizably English. It's just hijabs everywhere. And I went past one pub and it was just full of people.
All the English
just
people.
Just holding on to their pint going, is it all right? It's like, can I still get away with this before this is turned into a, you know, prayer mat?
Well, we went to the pub at lunchtime as well, didn't we?
We went to Ham, Egg and Chips. We went and had Ham, Egg and Chips at the pub today because we were recording this morning. So,
Is the drink part of the pub visit when you go for lunch?
It is for some.
It is for some. It was for me today, but it was an Amstel. I had an Amstel, which is like low alcohol. So yeah, it was for me today because.
I'm curious about this. I don't think the British are dying any earlier than we are here in the States. I don't know. It doesn't seem like it comes back to haunt you. Do you think there's something with the British genes that lets you hold your liquor better than we did?
We are dying quicker than everybody else. If you look at Alison Pearson, who's one of the best columnists in Britain, in the Telegraph today, was writing about the fact that where Britain fits in with its £160 billion a year National Health Service, what your chances of surviving cancer are. And they are the lowest in the G7.
That's probably why.
39th out of developed countries. But bearing in mind that 170...
But that's the reason, socialized medicine. I don't think it's the beer.
No, I think the beer is good for you.
It's important, like that freedom of association. The pub is our secular church. It's where we put the world to rights. It's where we gather and we in fellowship with each other. And I think that's one of the reasons the pubs were closed, just as the churches were, over the lockdowns, because we couldn't gather and coordinate and be one with each other.
They tried to bar me from my local pub because I went, when the lockdowns were happening, I refused to download the track and trace app. So I'd go up and they'd have a piece of paper and they'd say, what's your name? And I said, John Smith. And they went, what's your mobile number? And I went,
07777.
Yeah, well, you've got to be in trouble, Megan. This is the problem.
You've got to be.
I can't see a world that we can get out of this problem without troublemakers now. I think we need dissidents who are willing to turn around and openly mock the orthodoxies that are being shoved in our faces. And I kind of circumnavigate the polite bit. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, you're lying, you're hurting my children, you're brainwashing them, you're brainwashing everyone in society to see race and gender as the first things in life. I don't want to live like that. I want to live in a relatively colorblind society where my children are being looked after in school and where my values are being supported by the teachers, not where I'm at war with the state.
Let me ask you a follow-up on that. So you're brave and you've been outspoken for a long time, but it seems to me that it's taking its toll on you because I follow you on X and at times you seem very down and very forlorn, you know, about how much blowback you've gotten for taking, these are not outrageous positions, but, you know, you got the boot from GB and the police arrested you over this, you know, I don't like the surveillance state thing. You got sued for libel because somebody insulted you on the internet. Then you insulted them back. And the court said, well, I don't know about your insult, whether it's defamation of Lawrence, but he defamed you. So now you got a judgment. So the stuff piles up, being outspoken, taking risks. It's important, but it piles up. And I wonder if you can speak to the real life toll of being that guy.
We were talking about this today at lunch and Calvin said, either it's going to get you or you're going to get it. And look, I find it really difficult because I'm compelled to say what I see and to call out things that I think are not true. And I don't care in the instant, in the moment, of the damage that it will do me in the long term. But you're absolutely right. I do feel deeply forlorn because I don't feel that I almost feel like it's a bit early to start talking about all of these topics. Do you know what I mean? It's like these topics are so deep and so spiritual that me talking about them in a sort of inarticulate way, which I do, is difficult for people. And I mean, I don't even read what people reply to me on my Twitter, but I feel a deep sense of sadness, but at the same time, a deep sense of, you got to carry on, man. Because what are you going to do? What was your advice?
Well, I mean, in my perspective, Lawrence is the infantryman, right? So he's breaking down the barriers so other people can follow suit. That the established people, the people who put it polite and in accordance with civility of the Houses of Parliament, those kinds of people. But you're the person who goes and takes all the flak first, which is great for the people that follow, but not so good for you. And I think the problem is, what I was saying is that either it's going to break you or you're going to break free from it. Like, you can only do this for so long. You can only take so much, take so many hits. And everyone's like, yes, Lawrence, please do what you're doing. Thank you, which is great. But what about your personal toll? At what point are you going to say, you know what? I've fought the good fight. It's time for me to step aside and take care of my family and do other things and just let someone else take the flak for a while.
Well, I hugged my son on holiday, my little son, when we were skiing. And he said, you're shaking so much. And I was like, wow. So yeah, that's odd.
Aww. You know, Lawrence, I really think, for whatever it's worth, the decision for you, I think, should be to go forward. I think putting down the sword and stepping away from the infantry is probably the worst thing you can do. I think fighting the good fight has its benefits, and taking an active role in this cultural rot war that we're in, I think will be cathartic to you, especially now that you've gotten back out there. You're at the very beginning, in my view, of having figured it out, where you belong, what you should be doing. Forget GB, that was a farce. It turned out to be a shell of what it said it was going to be. The acting world is horrid, so that wasn't the place for you. And now you've found your right place, you know, as a leading social commentator who is, unlike so many others, not afraid to say the things, and doing it with a close friend who's also fearless and supportive. And I think this will go beyond weekly. I hope it goes at least 3 times a week, if not more, and provides the UK with this thing that they just don't have. It's so sparse over there. You can do it. You're at the lowest point right now because of all that's come down on you. But I feel like it's only blue skies from this point forward.
Well, I think you're right. And also, I'm blessed with Calv because, you know, you realize in times of real difficulty and trouble who is real. And actually, as a gift that you could receive in life, to get the insight of someone who is real is very, very inspiring. And you've been a great friend to me through this.
So thank you, brother.
Calv. You're awesome. I'm so glad you guys found each other. If nothing else, GB did that. And I look forward to tuning in and having you guys back on often. All the best with it.
God bless, Megan. Cheers. Thanks,
Megan.
Oh, they're so great. Okay, so if you would like to support Lawrence Fox and Calvin Robinson, you can watch their weekly show, Fox and Father, by going to YouTube. And just once you get to YouTube, in the search bar, type in Reclaim the Media. Well titled. And give them their support. All it takes is a little subscribe button, click, and then they've got you, and that'll help them. And you can see why it's important on a number of levels. And I would love it if while you're there, you go and subscribe to the Megyn Kelly Show too. Thank you all so much for joining us, and we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the Megyn Kelly Show. No BS, no agenda, and no fear.